Darren Reddick at the Download Festival talking to Danko Jones. Hey guys, how you doing?
Great.
Good, man.
Well, welcome. Have you played Download before? Excuse my ignorance.
Yeah, we did. We played it in 2004.
I've been asking people what your favorite memories of playing Download are. Is there something that stands out from perhaps, well, either this time or last time?
This time for me, well, both, we had a better show today than last time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as if it was a bad show in 2004.
Right.
It's just that there was way more people today.
Oh, good.
And that was cool. And then I met Sergio from, Quicksand, but for me, but Deftones.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So, Sergio Vega.
It's my first time at Download, so my favorite memory would be, just that there was a great, great crowd there, and we had, I don't know.
Well, maybe you can compare the Download crowd with other festivals you've played. Like, particularly, I'm always interested, I know that North American crowds, they're different in every way to English crowds, but
sure.
I only...
think there's the people who come to the English crowds as opposed to the North American crowds are just way more into the music. I don't know. I find that they're just way more into it. They know a little bit more about it too.
I find particularly like when you go to the Sheds or something in the States, they're at, like North Americans are up for a party, whereas here it's exactly that. They're like they'll quiet down for the songs, and then when the song's over, then they'll cheer, which is kind of more polite, really.
Yeah, it is more of a party atmosphere. The music is more of the background soundtrack to the party back home in North America, but here I think it really takes the forefront, and as a guy in a band, I like that.
Yeah. Have you seen anybody else today? Have you gone and checked any other bands out?
Yeah, I saw Juliette Lewis.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Juliette and the Licks. Yeah, I haven't seen her, but she puts on a pretty energetic show.
It was awesome, man. Yeah, it was great. We caught the Turbo Wolf set. They played right before us. That was really great.
Do you ever feel at these things... This might be a goofy question, but do you ever feel competition between bands? You know, like Turbo Wolf was on before you. Do you think, we're going to go on, we're going to blow those guys off the stage?
Turbo Wolf. Well,
no.
No,
okay.
They're going to edit that part and just start a war between us.
Oh,
and
them. No.
No, absolutely.
It should up your game, I'd have thought.
Yeah, if there's any band who says it doesn't, then they're not trying hard enough. They're not really into it. There should be a competitive spirit, good-natured, of course. It gets weird when it isn't.
Yeah.
But there's always this thing where it's like, well, we have to match or beat this. Whether you're the opening band or the headlining band or, you know, the next band in a festival lineup.
Cool. Now, I assume that if you've been... your band's been going a long time. You've probably... I'm hoping that you've seen... weird things at festivals. What is the strangest thing that you've either seen, experienced, or heard about at a festival?
It's really hard to recall that. You'd have to sit me down and just start talking about stuff, trading stories. That's when all that stuff comes out. But I will relate it to Download. Back in 2004, Lars Ulrich didn't play with the band, so Metallica backstage, where all of us were rehearsing with different drummers that eventually played on that night, like Joey Jordison, Dave Lombardo played Four Horsemen. And we were all there backstage listening to Metallica play Four Horsemen with Dave Lombardo. And it was funny how I noticed that it didn't matter what stature the band or the band member, everybody stopped being cool and just was a Metallica fan. They were like, every one of us was freaking out that this was happening in front of us.
That's fantastic.
That was a pretty cool moment.
I can't believe it.
And in the end, they played a truncated set, and they, you know, they brought out Lars's tech, Joey Jordison, Dave Lombardo. I want to say there was someone else, but it was pretty cool. They ran through the set backstage, and then they got out of their backstage world, and to go to their limos to go to the stage. And it didn't matter if you were Nikki Sixx, who was there with Brides of Destruction, or Dimebag Darrell, who was there with Hell Yeah, or you know, Lee Dorian or Cronus or whoever these guys were, Jamie Jasta, everyone stopped and just let Metallica walk. And I was blown away by the reverence everyone had for Metallica, because I have that. But it was interesting to see like huge guys like Dimebag and Jamie just like stop what they're doing and just let James walk to the limo. No one went up to James. And then when Kirk came out and Robert came out, people were like, hey, man, Kirk and Rob, hey, giving him high fives. But James was the first, and no one dared go up to him. And that happened backstage here in 04, and I was right there. It was amazing. And I met Dimebag that day, and we took a photo together, and it was pretty heavy duty. Because when I saw him, I was doing this, what I'm doing now with you, like we were just going... And I was like an interviewer away from Hell Yeah, where like they would do an interview and then I would do that interview. So I remember going to the publicist who I was with at the time, and I'm like, I really want to meet Dimebag, because he was backstage at Donington. He was causing all the ruckus. Him and Jamie, like everybody was like, I know it's people say this about him, but I saw it. Like, everybody backstage loved Dimebag. He was someone who everybody gravitated towards because he was the loudest and he was the funniest. And when I went up to him, I was like really shy to go up to him and ask him, can I take a photo with you? And he even joked around with me. And then he brought his brother in, and he brought other people in. I was like, all right, I just wanted a photo with you, dude. But he brought, so there's a photo of me and Dimebag, but there's like two other people in it as well. So it was really, and that happened here in 04. So it was cool.
That's a great story, man.
Yeah. And it's,
love that.
Yeah. It was cool.
Let's talk a bit about Black Sabbath. How inspirational have they been to you? As an artist, or just as a guy growing up?
For me, humongous.
Yeah.
Yeah, huge.
What was the jumping off point for you? What was the album that brought you in?
It's a long story, but I was taking a class trip to Quebec City when I was in grade 5, and they were playing Iron Man. I thought it was the heaviest thing I'd ever heard. And then a few years later, I saved up my allowance money, and I bought a cassette tape that had Iron Man on it, and it was Paranoid. And then I listened to that album, and I'm like, what the f***? Like, there's a slow song on here? Like, what is this? Like, which one? Was it Electric Funeral? There's a slow part? I can't remember which part. Well, but anyways, you know, back then, there was no internet. So you had what you had, and you just listened to it over and over and over again. So I got Paranoid, and I got Sabotage, and I just listened to Sabotage over and over and over again. And then it just sinks into your blood.
Speaking of Iron Man, I can remember just started playing the drums, just started. And I jammed with this guitar player, and he wanted to just play super fast punk. But I couldn't do it because, you know, I'd wear out in 2 seconds. I said, okay, screw it, and launched an Iron Man. So that was the first song I think I ever played.
Oh, wow, Iron Man.
The drums.
Cool.
That's great stuff. And how do you feel about this announcement that Black Sabbath is basically closing up shop, final tour? This will be their final Download appearance.
Right.
You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I might go against the grain here, but it's fine by me. I mean, they've already established. Let them chill out. A few months ago, Neil Peart from Rush retired, and everyone was like, "What the f***? What's this?" Like, just let the guy ride his motorcycle and let him just hang at home. And yeah, right. Yeah. Like, it takes a lot to play those drums. He's not getting any younger. And, you know, Tony's not, they're all, you know, well, Tony and Ozzy aren't in the best of health, I believe, I don't know, but just let them hang out and enjoy life and just, you know, watch TV and just eat popcorn in bed and just let them hang and chill. Give a guy a break, man. If he wants to eat pizza for breakfast, just let him do it. That's how I see, you know, the end of Black Sabbath. It's not as if they have anything more to prove. They've proven it tenfold, you know. So in every incarnation, you know, there's a thing that's going around, and it's a quote from Henry Rollins, and it's been made into t-shirts and bags, and it's all over Instagram and the internet, and it's this line that Henry said, and it's, you can only trust yourself on the first 6 Black Sabbath albums. And I was like, that, and nothing against Henry, because he's the last person I want angry at me, but I changed it and I posted on Instagram, you can only trust yourself in all 19 Black Sabbath albums. And that's my quote. Mic drop.
That's, oh, yeah, that's, oh, boom.